Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Go to just about any gathering these days, and people are talking, and politics is on the table. With the midterm elections just a few days off, however, the vast important right and responsibility that, as we've all found out over the last few years, has incredible consequence, is once again groggling along debating the merits of a terrible sense of humor to determining our future. You're about to take a ride into the realms of expanded reason when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News. The pandering punditry we hear each day seems to play within the confines of some imagined boundary, a self-limiting blinder to truth. And yet, all across America, there is a revisionary thinking that breaks new paths to hope and reason. It's often a bit painful to hear, and the words and ideas may at times seem, well, expanding. And in that spirit, we bring you a two-part discussion by writer and activist, entrepreneur and self-styled commentator on culture and the American dream, Robert Nininga, who sat outside his coffee house in Encinitas, California. And
well, we're down to a few days before the 2006 midterm elections, and quite honestly, it's an interesting election period because it seems as if there's a terrific amount of passion. There's people who are saying this actually does matter. I'm hearing that more and more. That people are really feel that this is a serious election. But then it seems as if everybody seems to think that. But it seems as if people are weighing the stakes a little more this time around. I'm sitting on the street here in Encinitas, California, outside of the East Street Cafe, which is a bistro and a coffee house where a lot of people come to think and talk and have some fun. And I'm talking with one of the proprietors here who also happens to be, from my perspective, a grand classic activist, environmental activist, and activist in many different forms. This is Robert Nininga. Bob, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
Well, Bob, we're here we are. It's just a few days until the election. I'm sure you're following this intimately. You're a very political guy. I'm going to give you a chance to say whatever is on your mind right now.
What's on my mind about the election? As a Green, I've been looking at the overall picture of what's working for Southern California and how that federal, state, local conversation. So, and in the face of the Bush administration, that's really what we as local activists have to do, because the federal government is so not there for us, nor can they be for us. And so that's where my activism, and as a journalist and someone who's like on the street kind of working with people, it's just that. It's like I'm telling people, you know, we're not going to fix the feds. George Bush has shown us how, shall we say, unstable the system is. And so as Californians and as like people from San Diego County, it's up to us to like look after ourselves.
I know you believe that these national issues have consequence, real life consequences for even people in this community. So let's start with that one though. How do we deal with some of these national things?
Well, the first way we deal with the national thing is we do not elect Brian Bilbray to the 50th district. The man, in his first week of office, voted for oil drilling off the coast of Southern California. And tourism, especially at the loss of all of our agriculture due to overpopulation, tourism is our bread and butter. And then here, this newly elected lobbyist, yada yada, I mean, don't even get me started on Bill Bray's record, but then his new record, only in office in a week, was to put oil rigs off the coast of California, to decrease funding for Amtrak, to make Iraq a permanent part of the Bush Jihad's war on terror, whatever that means. So here's this man who's a lobbyist for SDG&E. Again, his whole list goes down to FAIR, these pseudo anti-immigrationists. I mean, it's just crazy right now. So these I like to call them the federal monkeys. And they're playing all these weird games, and what they do is it undermines our sense of well-being. Because for the longest time we thought Washington had our back on no more oil drilling off the California coast, we just learned that's not only not true, we're now delusional and not fighting harder just to make sure that could never come back. So that's how the federal will now shape local politics. Because here in San Diego County, there's a new look to politics, and it's going to start to emanate as everybody starts fighting the federal government, literally fighting the federal government against any future oil drilling off the San Diego coast. It's going to get ugly. If I wanted to shift that out there, so here in San Diego, we have our own pit issues, overpopulation, traffic gridlock, water quality, air quality, and those are our local issues, but those are national issues, and how every community deals with those ecological conversations, because on just underneath the ecological conversations is the economic conversation. Oddly enough, it should be the other way around. We're too busy looking at the economics. We've ignored the environment. And as that gets shifted on his head, where we're forced to deal with environmental issues, and that's going to be because economically we're like, yikes. You know, global warming, what the insurance companies are doing. That's just, again, tips of the iceberg that we don't even have, I should say we haven't even begun to understand. Because I can just imagine what the people in Kansas are going through looking at another winter. You know, I live in Southern California. I don't have those winters. People in Connecticut, they must be going crazy. New Orleans, you know, they dodged the bullet this year, but they're living in a hurricane zone, in a planet with rising oceans. That's scary, you know. And the people of New Orleans saw that the federal government was not there for them, nor will they be the next time. Southern Californians need to get that. People from Oregon need to get that. Texans totally need to get that. You know, so that's how this conversation is shaping. You know, everyone knows I'm a California secessionist. As a journalist, I put it in my columns all the time. You know, I think the federal government's gotten too big. And the farther we get into this where, you know, our needs aren't being met, whether you're a Montana rancher or you're a surfer down in Imperial Beach, the conversation is the federal government is not working for us. I mean, and I don't want to sound too strident, but it's that important.
Part of the challenge right now is the fact that the main issues that are confronting the populace that they're being forced to confront relates specifically to the war. And yet, the environmental issues are gaining in strength. Environmentalism is finally back on the table. People are actually talking about it, they're thinking about it, they're feeling it. But it hasn't really acquired any real critical mass. I was appalled, for example, that in the 2004 election with Kerry, he didn't even mention the environment. He hardly mentioned it at all. And again, even in this particular election, it's hard to feel the sense of environmentalism. It's mentioned on occasion, but it seems as if there's other issues right now. When is this going to really start to make a difference?
That's a very valid point. But that's a failure of the environmentalist. That's a failure of the media. That we haven't, you know, connected the dots. Because the reality is, the anti-war movement is a pro-environment movement. From the very beginning, as a Green Party spokesperson, before the war even started, we were there downtown San Diego denouncing this as a war over natural resources. This isn't about Iraqi liberation. This isn't about anything other about getting at the natural resources. Americans need to get that this isn't a war about freedom. It's a war about, like, oil. It's a war about, like, taking other people's resources. And so, again, to be anti-war is to be pro-environment. And the media doesn't want to get you that. You ask yourself, well, why doesn't the media want that? Because remember, all media is owned by the corporations. Everybody in our government, from Hillary Clinton across, Barack Obama, all of them, they're corporatists. To be a senator, that means that the corporations have to support you. If they don't, you don't get to be senator. You know, to be a congressman needs to be, you already need to be bought and sold before you take office. Somebody has to own it. And that's the corporations. That's capitalism. That's industrialization. So industrialization don't want to talk about pollution and all the effects of that, because then we'd have to stop consuming as much. Americans consume way too much. Watch this Christmas. I ask all your viewers, watch television. And most environmentalists will tell you to kill your television. If you want to see how ugly the beast is, look with new eyes this holiday season at all the consumption they throw at you and your kids, and all those products they're selling you are oil-based. That's petroleum-based. So the Barbie you buy for your daughter this Christmas, that's dead kids in Iraq. Those are bombs in Iraq, is to make sure she has a Barbie under the Christmas tree. Americans need to feast. The reality is not just the oil that's going into the tanks. That's the medicine. Everything about hospitals are so reliant on petroleum. You know, our whole culture dies the minute we recognize that we've based it on a failing resource. So then you have to look at this idea of capitalism. It's like fool's progress. Because we're literally using a resource up, and we've done nothing to make sure that we can actually make the shift. Those are the things we need to look at. So no, the war in Iraq is not a war on terror. It's a war on the planet. It's a war on human sense of entitlement and just avarice. Vandana Shiva and Avrahati Roy and all these wonderful women thinkers from India and stuff, they're telling us the next wars are going to be over water. I mean, these are the conversations. So this one is just a warm-up for the future coming resource wars of the 21st century. Defer. I mean, you know, all that kind of genocide that George Bush turns his back on while people are being butchered in Northern Africa. That's just crazy. But those are resource wars. It's not about religion. It's not about that. It's about overpopulation and who has access to the stuff.
Well, interestingly enough, of course, there's plenty of talk about clean tech, and people are talking about solar. They're talking about wind, et cetera, et cetera. But the there's two big monkeys coming out of the box right now that are going to trump them a thousandfold. One is what is called clean coal, which some environmentalists seem to like. And then, of course, the one that people aren't prepared to talk about quite yet, but is going to be the mainstream thing, is nuclear. That's coming. People don't see it yet, but it will be here. And sometimes it seems as if we never really look at the real questions. For example, with clean coal, great concept, except that the hills of West Virginia are being taken out, absolutely taken out. So we, you know, somehow environmentalists have got to take a stand. There has to be some balancing act here, and we have to take a stand for what is really right, which is going to be truly clean technologies.
Well, it's not just clean technologies. I've been saying often it's about getting more from less, right? Less people. It's less people using less resources more wisely. So whether it's clean coal, yes, we don't want mountain top mining, right? We just need to consume less. You know, it's about voluntary simplicity, deep ecology. These are the conversations that are coming. And again, it's about population reduction. And again, a lot of people say, oh, you want to kill people? It's like, no, we want to educate people to say, you know what, don't have that third child. Hell, don't have that second child right now. Personally, as a non-breeder and a member of the Green Party, I just think of anyone who's like thinking about having children right now as being incredibly selfish, because we're leading into a world that is not going to be very child-friendly in the short term. It's just not. It's not child-friendly now if you look at the number of kids living on the streets of America. Look at the children in Darfur. Madonna adopting the little baby whose father had to abandon him in an orphanage just because he couldn't support this child on the most meager of lifestyles. I mean, that's our world of the 21st century, where, you know, one kid out of hundreds of thousands of Malawi children, you know, gets like the lottery. That's our world now. And again, and I keep telling a lot of the activists here in San Diego, maybe because we don't have the open space. I was just up in Mendocino, and there's so much open space in parts of California, it just boggled my mind. And then the closer I got to home, the more dense, the more people, the more traffic, the more pollution, the more noise. And it's a population thing, you know. Again, all of California, America would be a gorgeous place if we just learned to live within our means and don't think that quantity is easily replaced by quality. It's just not. You know, the more you have, the less you have, right? And I think, you know, think of it. Once upon a time when you had 20 kids in a classroom, that was a good place to learn. Now you got 35. That's overpopulation. And we clamor about we don't have enough funding for our schools. Right? But no one ever thinks, maybe we just make less babies. Here in California, everybody's wringing their hands about illegal immigration. Again, as a secessionist, I think it'd be better for California school kids if we stop interstate immigration. We don't need any more people from Arizona or Nevada or Indiana, because those people, when they come here, they're taking the good jobs. You know, because Californians aren't picking their own vegetables, and they haven't for years, right? But we are taking the good jobs. But if kids are coming from Iowa, or we let other people move here to take the really good jobs, who are we serving? Again, this is a green conversation about decentralization. I'm an honest believer that the Federation has not served the people. It's not serving the planet, and that's the problem. America is too big for its own good. And just like the Soviet Union broke apart, right? And now we can see what kind of ecological legacy was left by that type of industrialization. And once our federal government starts to break apart and then we start to see the ugly seams of mass consumption and commercialism and industrialization, we're going to start to see some really ugly scars that the EPA has been, like, you know, covering over for years. You know, we'll start to see, because I keep telling people, a bunch of my readers come to me all the time, and I have to keep pointing out to them, communism and capitalism are two sides of the same coin, and they're both, it's the commodity of industrialization. You know, it's all about industrialization. No matter how you paint the pig, industrialization is killing our planet. The global warming as we're currently experiencing it is because of human industrialization, not volcanoes. And yes, volcano-induced global warming has happened in the past. But we're not talking about that. We're talking monkeys who drive, mucking up the works. You know, and so, is that being addressed in this election? No. Was it addressed in the last election? No. Or the one before that? No. But what's going to happen, eventually the Greens, because we've been here and saying the same thing as long, eventually we're going to be seen as right, even though we've been right for the last 30 years, clamoring about, you know, like the modern day Cassandras, you know? And that's the conversation. We're all, your show is a perfect example of a voice, one voice in the wilderness. Right? My column in a different medium, you know, little tiny voices everywhere just trying. None of them are coming together because the mainstream is trying to, like, stop the messengers from coming together. And when they do, then we just denounce them and call them the BBC. And everybody's like, they're just the BBC. You know, we should all be as, like, shall we say, intelligent and forward-thinking as the journalists with the BBC right now. And is that a plug? They're not paying me. But I just read them. When I want really good press, I go to England to read all their newspapers because I can't trust the American press. And I'm a journalist in America. I can't even trust my stuff not to be censored.
Robert Nanninga is ramping up to the finish, which we'll get to following this short break.
Just when you feel like you're out on your own, just look.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.